Welcome to the Fitfluential Radio Podcast, the intersection of health, wellness, and fitness. Join host Kelly Olexa as she interviews thought leaders and world-class experts in order to demystify and deconstruct complex health and wellness topics. The goal of each episode is to provide you with actionable everyday tips and information that you can apply in your lifestyle. Now here's your host, Kelly Olexa.
Everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I am your host, Kelly Olexa, and today we have on the show Dr. Mike Roussel. I met Dr. Mike, actually, I was a fan of his first after buying some of his ebooks, I think, 8 or 9 years ago. It was Warp Speed Fat Loss back in the day, and we connected because we both kind of played in the, I would say, bodybuilding figure competition, you know, gym rat world, if you will. But Mike is highly, highly respected in the industry, not only that industry, but just fitness, health, and wellness as well. He just knows the nutrition game, if you will, everything there is to know about nutrition. He's a PhD, and just a little blurb from his official bio for your edification. He is a nutrition consultant, author, and nutrition advisor for Men's Health and Shape magazines. Dr. Mike's blend of science-driven nutrition advice with the practical spin that people need to make it work in their lives is what allows his clients to get above average results. He is the author of the MetaShred Diet and the creator of NeuroCoffee and Saravan, to products developed to improve memory and brain health. You're really going to learn a lot of, I think it's common sense what we're talking about in this interview. We talk a lot about food, the psychology of nutrition. So it's common sense, but I think hearing it from somebody who is so studied in all of this is really going to hit home for you, because I'll tell you what, when I have questions about food and nutrition and the things I'm getting hung up on sometimes, he's my go-to guy. He's always been my go-to guy, and he can cut through the BS that I think permeates some of the media and get to what's really important. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Dr. Mike Roussel. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fitfluential Radio. I'm your host, Kelly Olexa, and today I am joined by a good friend, awesome guy, and ridiculously smart human being, Dr. Mike Roussel. Dr. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kelly, thanks. Happy to be here.
I'm so thrilled that we finally got you on the show. I've known you forever, and I remember I was such a nerdy fan of yours. And when I got to actually talk to you one-on-one when you joined Fitfluential as an ambassador, I was so geeked out, because I think it was, and you have to tell me how long ago this was, when you published that Warp Speed Fat Loss ebook. Was that like 5, 6 years ago? How long ago was that?
No, Warp Speed Fat Loss, that was a long time. That was probably more like 7 years ago, maybe eight.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think I don't even know if I had my kids, my oldest kids at that point. So it might have been 8 years ago or so. It was a while ago. And you know, what's actually interesting about that, the Warp Speed Fat Loss, is, I mean, that was just such a great program. It was a scripted 28-day rapid weight loss plan. And I just finished a book that just got published with Men's Health called The MetaShred Diet. And The MetaShred Diet is really the evolution of Warp Speed Fat Loss. So those concepts and ideas, I think, have continued to evolve and now are The MetaShred Diet.
So cool. And really, for everybody listening too, I know there's a lot of newbies here, where this is going to go live in early 2017, when we have a lot of folks that are just getting into improving their health and wellness. And you might hear some of these terms, Warp Speed Fat Loss and MetaShred, and think that this might be, you know, a pill in a box and an overnight transformation. Let me just set the stage here, and you're going to hear this in this interview with Dr. Mike. Dr. Mike is one of the most, I just can't say, well-spoken, intelligent, informed human being on nutrition. I've heard him speak on numerous topics. He is my go-to guy when I have any question about anything. Why can't I digest broccoli? Ask Dr. Mike. Why do I have a problem with lactose? Ask Dr. Mike. What's the difference between whey protein and casein? These are all questions I've asked you, haven't they, Mike? I mean,
that's true.
You,
that's a story.
He's probably laughing because he knows how many times a panicked Kelly Alexa has pinged him on Facebook going, Mike, I've got some issues with Brussels sprouts. What do I do? So that said, I'm just setting the stage for everybody. Just know this man knows his stuff and he should be your go-to guy, your go-to source for everything. So let's dive right in. Mike, before the show, you and I were kind of huddling on what we were going to focus on today because we want you back on the show a lot. We're going to be doing some Twitter chats with you in the future. We talked about the psychology of nutrition. And for those folks that are listening, this is probably a new term. What do you mean by that? What is the psychology of nutrition?
Well, I think, you know, I really first, it's really the mental game of diet, right? It's the mental game of food. And I don't think I really appreciated this and the level of its importance until after even after I'd finished my PhD work. And partly because when I was a PhD student, we ran a study that was called a controlled feeding study. And basically what you do is you give the people in the study all their food and drink for the entire study. So there are undergraduates and graduate students weighing and measuring food. People show up, they get a cooler food, they eat it, that's all they eat, and then you measure an outcome. So it's like, it's a lot of people's dream, right? That you just show up at this research center and get your food. but it did, you know, it's very do this, get that result. And so I kind of became a little bit naive to how, you know, the reality of food and how people eat. And, you know, prior to that, I think, Kelly, you know, you and I both kind of got into fitness along the similar ways through kind of bodybuilding and fitness and muscle magazines. And, you know, that was kind of my indoctrination through weightlifting to nutrition. And that community is extremely militant as well. You know, if you say eat this portion of chicken, this portion of rice, and this portion of broccoli 5 times a day for the next 6 months, you know, Roger that, right? And they just make it happen. And so, you know, so there was that, and then there was this controlled feeding experience. And then I got out and I started doing more consulting out of a gym in New York City and with other clients that I had. And I found that the hardest part was the doing of the nutrition. It wasn't the crafting of the nutrition plan, and which is a concept that I call food logistics, like the logistics of getting your food. But part of that is the mindset, is the mental part. You know, what drives us to eat? What drives us to continue to eat or eat more or less of something? What drives us to eat certain foods? If we eat a food that we deem good or bad, right? If we eat a food that we have deemed bad, then what's our subsequent eating behavior? Do we then overeat after that or do we undereat after that? Like all these things go into the psychology of nutrition. And I think that, you know, that is such, it's such an important part, you know, how we look at our behaviors. You know, if you go and have pizza, right, after this, in the scheme of your life, a slice of pizza is not a big deal. But in the moment, sometimes people can really get caught up in that and really beat themselves up about having a slice of pizza. But it's like 500 calories in the gazillion calories you'll eat in your lifetime. It's not that big of a deal, but we can make it. And it's really a mental thing. And really, the area of nutrition that I've become kind of enamored with has to do with the brain and brain function. And, you know, the foods that we eat impact brain function, and then kind of the states that we're in due to stress, lack of sleep, exercise or lack of exercise, those things kind of create a different environment in our brain, which then drive us to eat or not eat certain ways. So the psychology of nutrition, I think, is just an extremely interesting and untapped area of food and nutrition.
You said so many truth bombs there. And of course, I was taking notes. Sometimes the microphone even picks up when I'm feverishly taking notes as I interview people. But you mentioned so many great things that we talk about here on the show, lifestyle, stress. And when you talk about how this affects your brain and your brain capacity and the psychology of nutrition, it just again reinforces this idea we've been talking a lot about on the show, and that, you know, Dr. Mike, I have to learn this, that I need to calm down. Like, I'm one of those people that you referenced, you know, because I've reached out to you obsessing about, I ate a piece of pizza and that's carbs, so that's bad. It's very easy easy when you get into a fitness lifestyle to get a, let's be real, get a warped mindset, right? You can think that it's precise macros and oh my God, I had three extra carbs today. So it's crazy. I think overall, we need to realize that everything is connected, and that can be good and bad, but it's not just food. It's not like, did I have 100 extra calories today? Like, our bodies are a little bit more natural in reacting to everything. And if you look at fitness and health and wellness from a bigger picture perspective, like you mentioned, getting enough sleep, keeping your stress low, not freaking out because you had a piece of pizza or because you had carbs, you're going to probably have better success in the long term. Now, when you, so number one, would you agree that more people need to kind of chill out and look at the big picture and look at all components of their lifestyle? That's going to be my first question to you. Do you see that too many people are compartmentalizing and looking strictly at this is how many calories I've burned in the gym and this is how many calories I'm putting in my mouth? What are your thoughts on that first?
So I think I think tracking your nutrition at whatever level of detail you want is fine. I think that if you feel that it's necessary, like that in order to get you whatever result you want, that you have to track those things at that level of detail, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. And I think, like you said, that fitness is multi-module, right? There are a lot of different components. There is nutrition, there's exercise, there is, you know, there's sleep, and I call deliberate stress reduction. Then there's kind of this middle piece of your metabolism, right? Which is very variable at a whole lot of different levels. And I think sometimes people like to get obsessively focused on something like counting the exact amount of calories that they eat, right? But if you're very specific in that manner, but you are not getting any sleep and you are hardly exercising, those other two pieces are so big in the grand scheme of your effort or of your results, that counting the calories is not going to really matter. So in chemistry, they have this concept called the rate limiting step. And so in a chemical reaction, right, like putting two things together to make something else, you can only make so much of your end product, right, based on the materials that you have. So if you need A plus B to get C, and you have unlimited amount of A, but not very much B, the amount of C that you can create is limited by the amount of B you have, because that's kind of like your rarest thing, right? And so I think a lot of people in nutrition, I call it the rate limiting step of nutrition. Like, what's the rate limiting step? If you are eating everything that you want to all weekend long, then being extremely specific about your work to rest ratios on your interval cardio is not where you should be focusing your efforts. That's not the thing that's limiting you. The thing that's limiting you is overeating all weekend. And so I think the thing that what people need to do is oftentimes they have a misguided focus on their wellness, right? Because they're super focused on calories in, calories out, and tracking it. But there's another piece that they're missing that has such a bigger impact. And that if they just fix that other piece, then everything else works out. So like one really like it seems like a ridiculous example, but this is a totally true example. I had a client, she was a model for like a big makeup company, had a big photo shoot coming up, was doing everything, killing herself to lose the weight she needed to get into this thing, to get into shape for this shoot. And so we're talking, we spent all this time talking about her diet. She's working out like crazy. She's controlling all her calories. And then at the end, you know, she's like, well, I like to have like, you know, some wine. And I'm like, okay, that's, you know, understandable. What, like what? Like, to just tell me how much wine. So she was drinking like a bottle of wine a day, right? Which, like at night, which I'm like, whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, depending on how you pour the glass, it's like 2.5 glasses, right? So
right.
You know, like, my thing is, my big thing with nutrition is it's like 100% judgment-free zone. But, you know, what I said to her was, I'm like, look, you're eating very small breakfast, you're eating very small lunches, you're crushing it in the gym, you know, 7 to 10 hours of intense exercise a week to get to this goal. But you're drinking a bottle of wine at night. Like, that is such a large amount of unaccounted calories for this thing. Let's just do one glass and do more protein at breakfast, right? That's all she did, was change that one thing. Boom, she was in shape, hit her targets, the photo shoot was great, and, you know, it really helped her career. So you know, oftentimes people need to like, they want to revamp everything they're doing. But in like her case, it was just like, well, let's just go to one glass of wine. And then everything else took care of itself. So I think people really need to find what is that rate limiting step of fat loss? Like what is the thing in their lifestyle that's holding them back?
I love that you shared that story because I'm sitting here listening to it and I'm able to relate to that woman only in, you know me, Dr. Mike. I mean, you've had to tell me. I actually had Mark Crabtree on the show recently and I mentioned that it was you and Joe Dowdell that were like, you need to stop doing 80 hours of cardio a day. You need to go see Mark. And he was like coaching me on chilling out. This is not that complicated. You need to relax a little bit. When you just share that story of that woman, I think of myself in, I've tried so hard and I didn't know at the time that I was developing massive hormonal imbalance. So I was fighting against my own body, but I was, you know, excessive working out, excessive training, trying to be so precise with my macros. And I think of that woman with the wine. Maybe she was drinking the wine because she was pushing it so hard at the gym and pushing it, not getting the results she wanted. That for her, it was more, I'm drinking the wine to relieve the stress because I'm exhausted. So, you know, I guess for everybody listening, take a step back. This is a lot of what we refer to on the show. Like when I say, take a step back, breathe, you know, use your common sense. You know, I think when, this is not to minimize your expertise, Mike, but when you talked with that client, you were able to look at something very simple. And I think maybe a lot of what you were probably saying to her was, calm down. This isn't, this is a judgment-free zone, like you said. Let's just, you could still have your wine, but have a little less. I bet that helped her relax, still have her cake and eat it, poor choice of words, but be able to reach her goals. And I just learned something from that too, because I have had a tendency to get all freaked out about, you know, macros and did I have one extra gram of sugar? So I think this is a really great lesson. I'm really glad that you shared that. That's a perfect segue into one of my next questions, which really is piggybacking off of your psychology of nutrition. So here's my question to you, Mike. Do you think a lot of folks, whether I know you work with hardcore athletes, you work with models, you work with everyday people, do you think most people are screwing up with what they eat in trying to get healthy or in why they eat? Do you know what I mean by that question?
When you say why, what do you mean by that? Because I think of a couple different
like Okay. So in other words, I look at people that can be eating everything. They're focusing on, I can't have gluten. I can't have this kind of artificial sweetener. You know, I've got to have my macros this way. And they can obsess about that where they're, what they're not really focusing on is all they're trying to do is, I hear a lot of people say, well, all I have to do is go gluten-free and then I can have all the bacon I want or Atkins, right? They'll say, yeah. I'm going to do this because then I can overindulge and pig out over here, or I'm going to take this pill and then I can have all the beer I want. As long as I avoid sugar, then I'm cool, because they're really focusing on the wrong factors instead of like, why are you trying to get a diet that allows you to pig out as much as you want? So hopefully that's telling you where I'm coming from. I think too many people have not figured out why they eat and why they have bad eating issues.
Yeah, no, I think that there are, I agree. I think there are a lot of layers there. I think one thing where people get, I wrote a piece that's a short read. It's on my website called the Gray Zone of Nutrition that I think is worth the listeners reading. And it's kind of about this idea we're all looking for this black or white thing. Like to your point, right? It's gluten free or not gluten free. It's all carbs or no carbs. And that to be successful with your nutrition, like there's got to be some gray. Like you're in this gray zone. And, you know, I do a lot with nutrition and health publishing. And so, but I can tell you that organism of publishing itself, you know, has been, you know, hasn't really done a great job for people because their headlines, you know, with clickbait and stuff, it's all very black and white and it all drives you to some extreme position where, you know, the data really shows us the more extreme your position, the less successful you're going to be over the long term with it on average. So I think that's one thing to think about that. There's no just, like my wife says, she hates the word just because it's like, I'm just going to do this. If I just do that, then this will happen. Like there's no just, in nutrition. And I think that people get confused with another idea and it's kind of gluten-free, organic, like whatever you want to do. Like I said, judgment-free on my side, is this idea of wholesome versus nutritious. you know, and so something may be wholesome. There was this place, there was a restaurant right down the street from this gym, Peak Performance, that used to be in New York where I worked out of, and they were very wholesome, right? The guy went to the farmer's market every day to buy the food. It was all local and organic. But you know what? They were still French fries that were deep fried in fat. Like, yes, they were local fries, and yes, it was like, you know, beef fat from grass-fed cows, but they're still French fries, right? And so that's a good example of wholesome versus organic. Like, they were wholesome fries, or wholesome versus nutritious. They were wholesome, but they weren't necessarily nutritious. And I think a lot of people, it's very popular to make food decisions based on their level of wholesomeness and not necessarily their nutrition. And when people do that, they kind of give themselves permission to overeat. I'm just going to eat as many of these gluten-free cookies as I want because they're gluten-free. You know, and then
so true.
The other part of that piece, and I mean, just like I have two members of my family have celiac, so I'm like well-versed, like we were gluten-free before gluten-free was cool. And a lot of the gluten-free foods aren't really better versions because it's potato starch and rice flour and they're all kind of highly refined. So, you know, making a switch from a regular cookie to a gluten-free cookie is not necessarily the best thing. And they're still cookies anyway. But then to your other point about why people eat, like what's driving you to eat, this is something where people spend no time because it's very uncomfortable. And I think part of what you need to do when you're looking at why am I eating is start paying attention to hunger and stop eating in front of screens. So I think if you were to do those two things, it would make a big impact on your nutritional life. Because if you're not eating in front of a screen, then all of a sudden you're going to pay attention to what you're eating. And research shows that if you eat in front of a screen, you're more likely to be hungry in several hours, and you're less likely to be satiated by the meal that you're currently eating. And part of it is because you're not paying attention to what you're eating. You're paying attention to something else. And the other piece then is to think about when you're hungry, like why are you hungry? So there are two kinds of hunger in hunger research. There's what they call physiological hunger, and then there's reward-driven hunger. So physiological hunger is basically you're hungry because your body needs calories, right? There is, you don't have enough energy to carry out your daily activities, and so your body needs energy. That's physiological hunger. We generally don't have a lot of that in our life. The other piece is reward-driven hunger, oftentimes called hedonic hunger. This is hunger when you are walking down the street and you walk by a pizza place and you get the smell, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, I could really go for some pizza, right? Or this is you're just like, you know, you're sitting on an airplane and then they come by and they say, oh, would you like some of these snacks? And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll have some of those snacks. Like, you have no interest in snacks until someone puts them in front of your face. right? Or this is you are stressed at work because life is intense. You leave and then you sit down, you get home and you snack on the caloric equivalent of two dinners before you sit down to dinner. Because you were stressed out, you know? And so like none of those reasons have anything of eating have nothing to do with your body needing calories, but they have everything to do with how foods that we eat impact our brains and make us feel better. And it's really important to pay attention to that. Dr. Barbara Rolls, who's a great satiety researcher and kind of she runs the Center for Ingestive Behavior at Penn State. She told me once that like satiety signals that our body gives us that says that we're full are always there. We just need to choose whether we're going to pay attention to them or not. And so, you know, she's famous. Some of her most famous research conclusions or findings are that like if you eat a salad or a broth-based soup before a meal, you eat about 10 to 12% less calories at that main meal following the salad. And she's like, you know, but what people don't understand is that's not have a salad and then it's free reign to eat whatever you want. That's if you have a salad and then are told eat until you're satisfied, most people will stop eating less. So it's kind of goes to that, the wholesome versus nutritious. It's not a green light to overeat just because you had a salad, but it's just saying this is a strategy that's going to help you eat less. It's just like the satiating effect of protein. If you eat 30 grams of protein at a meal, that's going to help you eat less because it signals your brain that you're full. But you could easily then eat twice as much protein and dessert and then have a snack later if you really feel like it. You know, like you need to listen to your body's signals. And I think that's something that we just don't do.
Oh, I hear you. And that's, I love that you brought that up. Was Barbara, did she write the books on volumetrics?
Yes, she's volumetrics, which are,
okay.
She'll tell you, like, she's an amazing researcher. And her volumetrics books, especially her last volumetrics book, was phenomenal. And, you know, she'll say that, you know, she's too busy running research studies to promote her books. And I think that's totally true. And that, I think that's a plight of a lot of scientists who write good books, is they're not out there. Like, she doesn't have a Twitter account. You know, she doesn't have an Instagram account. Like, how is she going to, you know, she's writing grants and doing research. And so as a result, you know, people buy other books that aren't as, you know, quality. So I would say the volumetrics, I think her most recent one is called, like, The Ultimate Guide to Volumetrics. And it's phenomenal.
She's awesome. And I'm just going to tell you, connect me with her, because a big part of what we want to do on the show is, you know, you just said she's doing all this amazing research and she doesn't have time to promote herself. That's why we're here, because if somebody like that can help teach and educate and inform our audience, and we can help improve health and wellness, that's what I want to do. So just giving you a little nudge there. I know we're close to running out of time, and you've got another appointment to get to, so I want to wrap it up. But I love one of the things you just said about not eating in front of screens. And I think for everybody listening, we have a heavy entrepreneurial audience, our fitness community, we've got a lot of bloggers and influencers, folks that are on social media all the time. And people, this is the number one thing that Kevin, my co-host, is working with me on, is I feel like I can't just sit down and have a meal. I have to multitask. I might as well check Instagram. I might as well shoot off some emails. And then, like you said, you're not focusing on what you're eating. You're not enjoying your food. You're not able to tell when you're full. I tend to eat so fast, and I think that's a very common trait of a lot of people. We're just getting through our day. We're rushing. We're too focused on multitasking. We don't get to enjoy our food, and therefore, I think a lot of times, like you said, we can eat too much. It's more, reward-driven than physiological. So that's some good stuff. Let's close up, and I don't know if you can go into this in too much detail, but maybe this will be a teaser for your next time. You know, you mentioned earlier in the show food logistics. What do our listeners need to know about what is food logistics, and how important is that in the big scheme of nutrition and getting healthy?
So food logistics is essentially, how do you get the right meals for you at the right times during the day, every day, right? It's the mechanics of making that happen. And I do a large part of my nutrition consulting business is with executives and professional athletes. And so much of that work is food logistics. Like, how do we get the right foods in the right amounts to these people wherever they are in the globe every day? And in our own lives, right, it's important to think about, how are we going to do this? Like, good food is not just going to show up when it's time to eat unless you prepare ahead of time. The world is, I tell this to clients all the time, the world is out to make you fat and slow, right? It's out to have you move less. It's out to give you caloric excess at every turn. And so you need to be prepared. And where I see a lot of people get into trouble is when they try to say, I'll just figure it out. Like, I'll just get something to eat. But the problem is with that, oftentimes, is when you go to get something to eat, you're usually already ready to eat. So you're hungry and maybe you're a little stressed. So you're more likely to make a less than optimal decision. You're more likely to say, well, I'll just get, you know, whatever, this burger this time. And, you know, next time I'll get something else. Right. But and that becomes all of a sudden 3 days a week. And so what you need to do is you need to plan out nutrition in advance. And in my book, The MetaShred Diet, one of the things I talk about is nutrition audibles, is you need to go to near your office, 3 or 4 restaurants that you know are near your office, and pick out what are 1 or 2 items at each of these places that you know you can get and it fits in your nutritional plan, so that when it comes time to eat, you're not thinking, okay, now what do I get? And then you have to do kind of that mental, you know, that mental labor to do that. Instead, you say, okay, it's time to eat. You go to your list, boom, you pick a restaurant, you get the food, and you're good to go. And so a big part of food logistics is being proactive, so you're not making that decision in the moment. Because what I think we don't appreciate is that willpower in, you know, a lot of what we do has to come from willpower. It comes from that front, that cognitive part of the cognitive conscious thinking, the front part of our brains. And that gets sucked up by work, and it gets sucked up by, you know, our social life and our families and our jobs. And so then when it's time to pull nutrition resources from that same part of our brain, we're already depleted. And it's in my experience that nutrition is one of the first things that people are like, eh, whatever, I'll just figure it out later. And so if you pre-plan ahead of time, not even just in like super specifics, you know, not grams and stuff, but you just pre-plan, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that. It makes it so much easier because you're no longer making a decision in the moment and you can just execute. And so on a day-to-day basis, you want your nutrition to be execution, not figuring out.
I love it. And you know what? I want to link up into the show notes the interview we did with Leslie Bradshaw, because she used a phrase I love. She goes, I committed to myself, just what you said. She committed to getting herself prepared for success, prepped for success. She goes, I treated myself like I was my own client and I gave myself that dedication. You deserve to be prepared. You deserve the best food. You deserve to schedule your workouts. Folks, do what it takes to prepare yourself for success. I think that this interview with Dr. Mike has given you all some really great starter tips. We will definitely have him back on the show. We're going to be doing some Twitter chats with him coming up. He's got some great products coming up and books. So we'll talk about that later. But Mike, for everybody listening, where's the best place that they can find you and connect with you on social media?
So on social, everything is Mike Roussel, M-I-K-E. R-O-U-S-S-E-L-L.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I know I kept you for a couple minutes over. So thanks for being on the show, Dr. Mike. Everybody, leave us your comments at fitfluentialradio.com and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Fitfluential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Please visit us on iTunes and like this episode and subscribe to the podcast. We want this to be your podcast, so please head over to iTunes, write a review, and give us your feedback. Give us your ideas and even guest suggestions. For a full transcript of all episodes and bonus giveaways, be sure to visit fitfluentialradio.com. We look forward to seeing you again for the next episode of Fitfluential Radio. Peace! Please remember our disclaimer for the podcast. The materials and content discussed within the podcast are the opinions of host Kelly Alexa and the guests interviewed. This information is intended as general information only for listeners of the podcast. Listeners should always seek professional advice, and content and opinions expressed in the podcast should never be construed as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.